You're listening to the official podcast of Asbury University, produced by students with God-honoring conversations that inform, edify, and encourage. This is Asbury. We explore culture and current topics through a Christian worldview, promoting a well-balanced life, and we empower our community to belong, become, and be set apart. I'm your host, Abby Laub. Welcome to This is Asbury. Welcome to This is Asbury. I have Dr. Kim Okeson in the studio with me today. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here with you on the podcast.
So, Kim, tell us a little bit about what you do at Asbury and just a little glimpse of your background. I know you have a very unique background, so tell us about that.
Okay. So I'm an assistant professor of communication here in the School of Communication Arts, and I also oversee our cross-cultural engagement, the academic side of our program for our students. And the two things that I do here at Asbury really speak to my diverse background or unusual background. I spent 13 years of my adult life as a missionary overseas, and I worked in two different countries. I lived in three different countries outside of my passport country. I lived in England for a year. I worked in Tanzania for 2 years. Tanzania is in East Africa. And I worked in Kenya for 11 years.
Wow.
And that really developed in me a huge passion for intercultural communication competencies. And so together with my PhD studies, with the classes I teach here and directing the CCE program, that passion like fits right into that spot here at Asbury in helping students understand the globalized world that we live in and how they can really develop communication skill to be successful in that kind of a space.
Absolutely. So you had your whole family with you. You have a couple of children, right?
Yeah, I have my husband and I, and when we were in Tanzania, it was just the three of us. Our son Isaiah was a baby when we went. And then Anna was born 2 years later, and she went with us to Kenya. We moved after she was born, we moved from Tanzania to Kenya. So yeah, they are third culture children, and they have very unique life perspectives because they were with American parents, but living in another country and culture altogether.
Yeah, that was an education in itself right there.
Yes.
What was that like living abroad with very small children? That must have been challenging.
It was challenging. I often think of it with these two words, labor intensive. And the reason is because in both of those settings, just life itself was more work. For example, you made all food from scratch, and sometimes you'd be working through a recipe and you'd have to stop and make an ingredient in order to get to the final product. But then also the, you know, doing the laundry and different things was just more, a lot more work than here in the
just
U.S.
Just the domestic life. Yeah, I think we definitely take that for granted here, how fast we can do things.
We do. Yes, here you can wash the dishes and the clothes all at the same time, right? But the flip side of that is that the kids' life experience was had a real simplicity to it, where they would get up in the morning and spend the majorities of their day outside. Interacting with people and nature. Right? And so it was a very wholesome kind of upbringing. And also because we didn't have television and other things, they have a real love for literature because we read them great literature from the time they were young. So one of our goals was the Chronicles of Narnia all the way through by the time they were five. So we did that for both of them. And if we had lived in the U.S. during that time, it would have been harder.
Yeah, absolutely.
To do that.
I think every American family should just like be dropped into that environment for a year and like just see how it grows them as a family.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, they're precious times.
Right. That's really cool. What great memories for you and your kids. So so what have you brought to Asbury with that? Obviously, you've got a completely different perspective on a lot of things. Just tell me about how that has really helped shape the way that you teach students.
One of the things that it's done for me is I have had to practice in my everyday life communicating across difference, whether no matter what country I've lived in. And so being in an American classroom, I am working very hard to understand the cultural context and background of each of my students and then teach them in a way that they can understand what I'm doing and how they can understand the concepts. And so an example of that is I often have activities in my classes because some people learn kinetically, right? They need to be in motion in order to learn. And we in America grade on participation. That's a consistent thing in all the syllabi across campus. But if you come from a different context in the U.S. or if you're just very introverted, class participation can seem very stressful and unusual. And so I make it easier for everyone to participate by having activities. So that's one way it's impacted my classroom. Another way is that I value diversity of thought and diversity of perspective. And so I'm really pulling students out to disagree, to bring a different perspective, help us understand a concept in the broader world and not just in a U.S. context.
Yeah. I love that students get that experience in your classroom. So you do undergrad and graduate as well. What are some of those grad classes that you're teaching, and do they also relate to this?
They do, yes. So I teach in the undergrad program and in the Master's of Communication. And in the master's so far, I've taught advanced intercultural communication. In the second half of this semester, I'll be teaching global communication.
Oh, cool.
And global is the way that nations and corporations and nonprofits, governments, how they communicate with each other and how countries really represent themselves in a global stage. And so advanced intercultural focuses more on the individual, person to person. And what was absolutely fantastic in that class this past semester was I had students who were in their everyday jobs. They were doing intercultural communication every day. And so they were applying things they learned from that class before I saw them again the next week. And they would come in and say, hey, this happened. And I was able to speak into this.
Yeah.
And even in AI, I had one student where his company wanted to start doing some things with AI, and he helped them understand that that would only work in a certain context, but not with this other group of clients because their cultural context was different.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's so helpful to any company or school or family, anything for that matter. I know you gave me a stat one time. It was something about in business, like the top five challenges or something, like all were communication challenges.
Yes. So across the board, Forbes.com, Harvard Business Review, even the textbooks that we present to our students, consistently employers want strong communication skill always in the top five skills listing for their employees. So it's really critical both for landing the interview, being successful in the interview, getting the job offer, but then it's massively important for keeping the job.
Yeah.
Some people can maybe put their best foot forward during an interview, but then when the dailiness of the job occurs, they can't communicate well in that space.
Yeah.
And people lose jobs because they can't communicate. A business or a nonprofit or a church will tolerate something for a certain amount of time, try and help someone to grow, but if they don't build their communication skill, eventually it becomes a no-go.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just what you say or what you write or how you say or write. It's just how you are, you know? Like somebody said something to me one time and it was like, everything says something. Like, you know, you're communicating all the time,
constantly,
whether you realize it or not, whether it's nonverbal cues or whatever. Showing up late, like that says something. Showing up early, that says something. And I think students a lot of times do have to, that's something you have to learn a little bit just by living. But I'm sure
that's exactly right.
I'm sure that works into your lessons a little bit. You know, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean when you say communication, you know?
That's right. So in the last week, I've taught about how we unintentionally communicate. And I've also taught on emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence you know, became such a buzzword in the business world, really in our corporate culture. And communication skill is a massive part of that. Yeah. Being able to read the room, to interact with someone with empathy and understand mm-hmm. their perspective, not just mm-hmm. your own. So you're not just bulldozing over someone. Yeah. And so my students, we had a rich conversation about that. And what was really fun is that your emotional intelligence can be very seriously compromised if you're sleep deprived.
Oh, absolutely.
And what a fantastic conversation with college students, right?
Right.
Because they're all still trying to figure out, do I really have to get X yes. number of hours a night, right?
Oh, so I think that about was how fun. Cranky I am if I'm tired. I mean, aren't we all? Why do we teach communication at Asbury? What's the root of this, really?
That is such a great question. Thank you for asking that. We run into this question a lot because we all start communicating from the time we're an infant. Mm-hmm. And because it's a skill and something we've been involved with over years, we don't always think of it as something we need to study. Mm-hmm. But the fascinating thing about communication is that you actually can learn skill sets to improve your communication. Mm-hmm. And also, it can be the first time when someone's in college or late high school maybe that they start to realize the rest of the world doesn't necessarily communicate the way their family of origin communicates. Mm-hmm. I know for me it was when I became old enough to go to other people's homes for a meal. Mm-hmm. Or to go on vacation with a friend's family, and all of a sudden you realize it's different.
It's different in this family.
It yeah. is. Yeah, so communication, the root of the word communication is actually communico, which means to make something common, mm-hmm. to make mm-hmm. something shared. And when we talk about communication, we're talking about creating shared meaning. Mm. And so when we teach communication, we start with basics, you know, interpersonal, that's a one-on-one communication. But communication is a much, much broader field than just you and I, as important as that is. It is so critical that we can communicate well individually. But the field actually covers things like identity formation, group communication and leadership. Mm-hmm. I teach my students, for example, how to run a meeting.
Oh, that's cool.
And then speak with adults who are in their jobs who say meetings are run very poorly, right? Like they can't believe that someone actually teaches how you run a meeting, how you take a group from not understanding a goal to understanding a goal and then actually reaching the goal. Yeah. We teach social media. We teach leadership. Mm. We teach intercultural and international communication. So our world is globalized. So what does that mean with how I need to run an organization or how I need to organize my church? What kind of worship music are we going to listen to and have in our services? So those are all areas that communication studies. In addition to the other parts of our school, which deal with the media. And that is another very long list of things that you yeah. can study in communication. The final area that we teach in courses where I would be involved would be strategic communication, mm-hmm. which years ago would be called public relations. Mm-hmm. And this is the messaging of an organization to its constituents, both inside and outside of the organization. So communication, we teach it because it's massively important for success in any career field mm-hmm. And also in our building of healthy families, healthy communities, healthy societies, even healthy nations.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you mentioned families in there because I think I wish I had some of the research handy, but just showing how disconnected families are and how few evenings they're around the dinner table together or it's like, hardly any right now, you know, and if you're not communicating there and like developing those communication skills there, that's going to be challenging as you grow.
Yes, that is an excellent point. And even in meetings where different faculty either here or at conferences that I've gone to across the board, because of the lack of family structure mm-hmm. where people are learning to communicate mm-hmm. around a table or mm-hmm. in other family functions. And because of communication technology, allowing people to be absorbed into their own telephone and not communicating with others.
Yeah.
I've had so many professors say to me, my students don't know how to communicate.
Yeah.
They don't know how to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to talk to me.
Mm.
And so much so, you know, that we have worked, I have worked with other faculty to get them to advise their students to take interpersonal communication because it's a critical life skill, even if it's not for their major.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Take it as an elective.
Absolutely. And it would apply to any field.
It would. And it's also my, like, behind the scenes, the students don't always know this, and they will now if they listen to the podcast. But it's part of the reason I do so many activities in class is because they have to talk to each other.
Right. Right.
Right. There was a chapel speaker last year who also teaches at a different college. And he said, because he was in college without mobile phones and smartphones and all, that he tells his students to put all their technology away, lean across the aisle and shake someone's hand and say, hi, I'm so-and-so. Mm. Will you be my best friend? And that's his solution to try and get them to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Right. And so another way this manifests in my classroom is I'm a no cell phone classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Once I start class, they all put their phones away, and it really enhances their engagement and the probability, the possibility that they will engage with the people sitting around them.
Yeah. Well, you recently presented at a conference at Taylor. What was that about? Can you tell me about that?
Yes. Yeah, so Taylor University hosted an Advancing Women in Leadership conference for the CCCU, which is the Organization of Christian Colleges in the U.S. and also some schools that are overseas. And so I did a presentation on women leadership and communication strategies for creating mutual understanding.
Wow.
And so essentially what I talked about is that communication really is about creating understanding. Like, one of the fastest things you can do to kill effective communication is to just have to be right about everything and not to work for understanding. And women are in a lot of leadership positions across our higher education institutions, and women struggle more with communication in some of those spaces than men do, simply because the higher education landscape has been more male-dominated historically than female.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the spaces that women end up in, they might be in a meeting with six people and they'll be the only woman in the room. And also the way that men and women communicate is different. And so there are just some fundamental things to discuss about that. But it was a really rich time, and there were women in the room who, when I said, for example, have any of you ever been talked over in a meeting? The hands that went up just across the room, it was incredible. So we talked about strategies. I had them give me, so if that happened to you, did you do something that was effective, that really gave you a good result? Or what ideas do you want to glean from each other? And it turned into a great conversation with the larger audience.
Yeah, that's great. So how do you think gender roles affect communication in the workplace and beyond? I mean, is it just kind of like what you're hitting on? Is it a confidence thing? Is it, you know, what do you think the differences are?
Some of it is a confidence thing. The idea of working on our communication skill isn't something that comes naturally to us. We think of the idea we need to present in the meeting, but we don't think about how we're going to present it. Women might strategize a little bit more than men if the women feel like they're speaking into a majority culture and they're not part of that majority culture, they will try and think of how to do that. But most of us don't. We don't think about how we're going to communicate. Then we get into the meeting and we're dealing with the ideas, but the communication isn't going well and we don't know why.
Hmm.
We don't have a structure in our framework of thinking of how to either resolve something or to communicate it more effectively. One of the things that can happen with women, some of it is confidence. They do allow themselves to be interrupted more. They do allow themselves to be spoken over more. And so that can create a natural, well, I had a great idea, but no one's listening to me, mm-hmm. right? Some of the other things that can happen with men and women is that if you are a man and this is you're in a majority culture space, you're used to communicating with those people and in that space, is that you're also not strategizing your communication. And so you're not thinking about how it's being received by the other people in the room. You're just going about business as usual, so to speak. And women often tell stories that deal with people, and men often tell stories that deal with data. Mm-hmm. And so to get the two to understand each other, if you have fewer women in the room and a woman starts to relate to something that's being discussed and does it through a story, she may get interrupted or spoken over by a man that's in the room simply because he can't find the data in the story. And so the mutual understanding is to understand some of the fundamental differences of how we communicate, to validate those as legitimate,
right,
and then work on ways to hear and understand each other.
So do you see other key differences in how men and women in leadership roles strategize their communication? Do you think, are there some other, I don't want to use the word stereotypes, but mm-hmm. are there some other kind of typical ways that
so
are different?
One of the things, yes, one of the things that women do a lot, we do this on airplanes, we do this in conference rooms, is that we tend to make our bodies smaller. We get into a physical space and we won't sit towards the edge of our seat. We just make our space smaller, and that can communicate very, very much so without you meaning to, that you are contributing less to the meeting or to the conversation. Also, women tend to be labeled more aggressive when they assert themselves more, and that can keep women from asserting and giving a good idea or pushing back on an idea that is like needs to be pushed back on, right? Mm-hmm. And so just the worry of being labeled, because no one wants to be considered aggressive,
right?
Right. Yeah. And but assertive, there's a lot of positive to that. Yeah. It has confidence behind it, and you know not just what you're saying, but how you're saying mm-hmm. it. So that's another way. And I'm not sure where this comes from with women, but we do tend to use language that discounts us more easily than men use language that discounts themselves. So an example would be the word just.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you send an email, I'm just checking in, as opposed to I am checking in.
Yes.
can you just give me an update, or I need an update?
Please. It's like you're apologizing by saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We use a lot of apologetic language, and sometimes we can even apologize for things we're not responsible for because we just think we need to do that. And in a corporate setting, that can allow the things that you say to be disemphasized because you started out mm-hmm. by kind of giving a caveat or apologizing. Or women will say things in a meeting such as, I'm not sure if this will make sense, bear with me.
Oh, yeah. The question, does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. And it's like, right? I mean, because you do, you want to, if you
so
think you're losing
your
audience.
Talk to Dr. Ogerson and say just and ask her if that made sense.
That's right. Yes.
Oh, I hear those things all the time. I catch myself saying those mm-hmm. things sometimes. Yeah.
Yes. And once I learned this, you know, I went through a process where I would write an email and then I would check and see if I said just.
No, yeah.
Right? Because it just, hear it?
There
it just
is.
Comes out naturally.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So those are some things where perhaps it's really rooted in women often avoiding conflict, like being peacemakers and being nurturers,
right.
And we're building relationships.
Right. Well, and I want to just play devil's advocate a little bit. You know, I do think in a lot of ways, like, that is innately how we are, you know, by God's great design. You know,
yes.
We need to be more like nurturing, yes. And, you know, we're the ones who will most likely have the children when they're babies. You know, we
That's
have
right.
to have that soft, mm-hmm. like softness. You know what I mean? So I think, does some of it come from that? And then, of course, absolutely, some of it, it's like, well, traditionally, if you were a homemaker and then you went into the workforce, you know, you might struggle with the confidence. So I think there's two things going on.
I agree. Oh, absolutely. And and I'm not at all saying that women should stop being women.
Right.
Right. And that all those amazing qualities that God's given us to nurture. I'll give an example. I can remember in an interpersonal communication class when an older student, a female older student, when we were talking about conflict and I was teaching that conflict can actually be good. Mm-hmm. It can cause greater results, better conversation when you're actually not just agreeing with everything. Allows everything to get out on the table. There's lots of benefits to conflict. And when I said there are benefits to conflict, she had such a physical response in the classroom of just kind of gasping for breath, because she was pretty much thinking, I have lived 35 years of my life and no one's ever said that to me before, right? So she's avoided conflict. So if you have a woman who's avoided conflict for most of her adult life up until that point, right? She goes into the workplace, she might have a phenomenal idea, but it's going to undo someone else's idea or a process that's been in place for a long time. And instead of pursuing that greater good, she decides not to raise it because it'll create conflict.
Right. Yeah.
So that idea can be really powerful, where you're not giving up your femininity, you're not giving up the nurturing aspect of being a woman in a meeting space, but you're also then not shying away from the conflict, which will actually give you a better result.
Yeah, no, I like that. So what are some of the other areas of research that you're into right now? I know you're always up to something.
Right. So because this grad class starts the second 8 weeks of this fall semester, I'm doing a lot of reading right now in globalization, because that is what's causing us to even need to study global communication, right? Because our world is so connected. So I am doing research in the area of globalization. I'm also researching in racial reconciliation and theology. And the last one is identity formation in liminal space. And essentially, that's a huge interest of mine because of the fact that I lived overseas, my children lived overseas. Liminal space is that in between where we call people, young children who grew up overseas, we call them third culture kids or third culture students. And the reason we do that is because their reality is actually a third culture created from two other cultures. Their passport home, like where the language their parents speak, the home culture, and then the culture they're living in, and then they create their own third culture. And I think the identity formation, which is an area that communication studies really focuses a lot on, that we have a lot to learn about how that identity is formed in spaces that are quite unique to an individual. And I think we can draw some really strong parallels into our Christian life with the fact that we occupy some liminal space. Like, we are citizens of this earth, but not fully.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we are citizens of another world. And that changes how we make decisions on a day-by-day basis and the things we choose to invest in, both time and money and relationally. And so I think there's a lot of parallels.
Yeah,
that's a lot of parallels in that.
Absolutely. Well, great. It sounds like your students are going to have some interesting conversations this fall. I like it. But let's break it down a little bit, Dr. Ogerson. So just some practical things to leave listeners with. What are some of the surefire benefits of knowing how to communicate effectively in professional positions?
Yes, that's a great question. My first practical tip would be to practice active listening. So active listening is when you stop thinking about how you're going to respond and you just hear, right? You're taking in the verbal and the nonverbal communication that's coming at you, and you are not engaged with technology. You are actively listening, a lot of eye contact with the person who's communicating with you, and you're really thinking. And then you take a moment to pause before you respond, right? So that you give yourself time to really think through the information that's been given to you, mm-hmm. and then to respond in a way that seeks understanding, as opposed to just creating argument or just pushing back on something. I've mentioned this many times in this podcast, but listening for understanding is one of the greatest gifts that we can give to our interpersonal relationships as well as our workplace. Mm-hmm. Really understand if you supervise a team and they come to you with a problem, seek to understand what's really causing that problem. Maybe what they're communicating to you is more symptomatic and it's mm-hmm. not actually the problem itself.
Yeah.
So to listen for understanding. Asking open-ended questions is a really wonderful communication skill where you aren't giving the person speaking to you an easy out with a yes or no answer, right? So an open-ended question means that they have to answer with complete sentences and thoughts and not just a one word.
This is for all the parents of teenagers.
Yes, and it allows you to get to the more complex things that they're thinking about and not just dealing with a simple, mm-hmm. a simple thing. We're complex beings, right? And our communication doesn't always reflect that. And we can ask open-ended questions to allow someone to communicate more fully with us. The last tip that I'll share would be, well, second to last, would be to embrace the idea that conflict and conflict resolution is super healthy. And that digging in, you know, to a hard topic or into a decision that you're trying to make, not being afraid of the conflict, mm-hmm. but building up your skill in how to manage conflict as opposed to avoiding conflict altogether. An example of how this really hurts, not just personal relationships, but it can hurt an entire institution or an entire business, would be if you have a meeting where you're talking about hard things and no one expresses their ideas or how they're feeling the conflict in that idea or the decision that's being made, mm-hmm. then those conversations go outside of the meeting it results in a lot of passive-aggressive behavior mm-hmm. in your family or in your organization.
Yeah.
And one of the best things to do to combat passive-aggressive communication is to have meetings where it's good to disagree. Mm-hmm. And just like you said in this interview, to play the devil's advocate, mm-hmm. Things that you can do in a meeting is if you have a lot of people in the room who think the same, you can actually assign a person in the meeting to play the devil's advocate mm-hmm. consistently throughout mm-hmm. the meeting. Try and poke holes in the idea and give the pushback, because inevitably it will result in a better idea.
Yeah.
Right? Another strategy you can use is the empty chair. So if everyone in the room really does agree on most things most of the time, you can set an empty chair at the table so that you are visually forced to think about the fact that there's a different perspective out there somewhere.
Hmm.
And we're just not thinking of it. So the empty chair can help you to remember to think about the unintended consequences mm-hmm. or the alternate perspective and how you would address that. The last tip that I have is to ask trusted colleagues and friends about your communication style. If you find that you're in meetings and you just can't ever get your ideas across, or when you communicate with certain types of personalities, you feel really flustered, you can ask people that you trust to give you feedback on what they see, or even to help them get you over that. Mm-hmm. People that you trust and who believe in you can speak truth into your life, both positive and negative, right? Yeah. So the positive can be, you don't need to be nervous when you talk to this person. You have so much to offer, right? You have a lot to contribute. They also can let you know if you have verbal pauses that you do a lot, mm-hmm. that you are completely doing subconsciously or unconsciously.
Little ticks, kind of, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm, yeah.
Something that we hear a lot from college students right now is the word like. And they're not actually using it in any way except as a verbal pause. As they're thinking, they just throw that word out there to kind of give them a little bit more time to say what they want to say.
Just being comfortable with that silence of
yes.
pausing. Yeah.
Yeah. So those tips for...
I just said just twice, three times.
Yes.
Ah!
And you don't even know. You don't even know that it's there. Or the apologizing. Every email I get from you has an apology. You just just say, I was tied up.
Right.
Instead of making a big apology about things. Yeah, so those are the tips that I can think of.
Those are great tips. I like it. Well, thank you, Kim, for coming on here. What are you teaching in this next block of classes?
This semester in the undergrad, I'm teaching cross-cultural engagement courses and interpersonal communication. Grad, I'm teaching the global communication class. That'll start in 8 weeks.
Right.
And then in the spring, I will teach intercultural communication and then group communication and leadership.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. These are great tips and some interesting thoughts behind all this as well that you shared today. Thanks again.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of This is Asbury. To learn more about Asbury University, visit asbury.edu.